Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Welcome to West Coast Project's closing of the season for Fargo.
It's the end, Mike.
What'd you think of 310, Somebody to Love, Michelle?
I want to guess what you thought, and I want you to guess what I thought. Who do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll guess what you thought.
Okay.
I'm guessing you hated it.
Tell me why.
Because it didn't have the ending definitively put in front of us. And you didn't want to see good people die.
Oh, wow. That's pretty astute. I didn't hate it. I can't even think of the word I want to use for it. And I've been thinking about it for a couple hours. It was
unfulfilling.
It was not unfulfilling. It was mildly fulfilling. It was okay fulfilling. What happened, you know, needed to happen, but that's what happened, I guess, is what needed to happen and nothing else. It didn't, you know, blow my skirt up or anything. They didn't give us anything, I don't think, other than what we kind of expected, in my opinion. Now, I'm guessing that you really liked it. Because you like those endings where you get to take it wherever you want to take it. It gets to be your story in place of the storyteller's story.
Well, you're partly correct. Okay. I thought it had a great ending. And I also thought it left me feeling super unfulfilled. Great acting, great characters, a great ending. Very Coen-esque. In the Coen shows, movies and TV representations thereof by writers who are trying to be like the Coens. The demon is rarely defeated.
Right.
So this kind of fit that. So I like the ending. I think the ending, I love the Anton Chigurh-ishness of it. That it's the evil just kind of stays alive. Because I think that's life. I think you don't ever truly completely defeat evil. But there were some things I didn't like. You know, I didn't like that Nikki didn't fulfill her very profound, very, very profound task that she was given by Paul Moraine. I thought that was an important element of the story.
What do you mean she didn't fulfill it?
She didn't fulfill it. She was given the statement and she was given the task to take out essentially Varga, and she altered her task to take out Emmett.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking Emmett when she was saying it and doing it. I felt like to her, I mean, she tried to take out Varga, but yeah, I completely get what you're saying
with
that.
She didn't remember the statement correctly. That tells us that she didn't pick the right person to take out. If she was taking out the correct adversary, that statement would have flowed from her and she couldn't remember it.
Well, I thought she did even great with that. I mean, somebody says something like that in that 16th century speak. And, you know, you're able to, in 16th century English, and you're able to repeat it in that time of high tension. I was impressed that
she was
able to do that.
But she was having trouble remembering it. That was the message.
I didn't think so. That's not what I got out of it anyway. I completely see your way of thinking about it. But I got that she couldn't remember it, but then it started coming back to her. Like, at first she couldn't remember it, and then it was like, oh, wow, okay, this is it. And she started saying it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty important message, Michelle. That's why she didn't remember it easily, because it wasn't the right person. I mean, he. When Paul told it to her, she tried to say it back at that time, too, and struggled. And he said, don't worry, you'll remember it when it's time. So I thought that was a very strong clue that she was doing something human and not divine. She was doing something that was petty and was her desire to take out Emmett and not the divine goal that she was given by Paul Moraine.
Well, he didn't say Varga's name specifically, though, did he?
No.
And it's like you said, I mean, you can't have it both ways, right? You can't have the evil that is the Coen-esque kind of experience escape or have a potential for escape, or we don't know if it's escaped, and have her take it out too.
No, I'm not asking for it both ways. I'm happy with how it happened, because I think evil doesn't get always wiped off the map. Evil lives on. Varga lives on. I think both the what is it, Snickers and Rikers happen. I think Snickers and freedom for Varga both happen. She goes home to Snickers. He goes out into the world again.
Why do you think that?
I just do. I think she's a good force. She'll always be around to try to push back against evil. And I think Varga rolls on and just keeps being evil and pushes back against good.
I happen to agree with you. My thought process is a little bit different as to why, though. The ending of it, I felt like, really mirrored the season one, episode one, the first scene. And that guy was being accused of something that he didn't do, and he was going to be held accountable for it and going to pay the price for it because nobody would listen. And then this end scene was somebody that they were trying to hold accountable for something that he did do, but I think it was going to be the opposite, where he was going to not be held accountable, even though he actually did do it. I feel like it was like a mirror image of that first scene, this last scene, even so much as to how they panned the camera up in the first scene and they took us to Fargo. Remember, they had like the little picture on the wall and they took us to Fargo. And then this one panned the camera up and it took us just out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a hallway, but yeah. So, but I do happen to agree with you that I think somebody was coming and going to tell her he got to leave.
Yeah, the long and short of it is that Holly did exactly what he had always intended to do, and that's make the viewer decide and not just observe a story. So the viewer had to decide the ending and not just observe the ending. And, you know, if you read any of the forums, the proof of that is in all these comments where half the people loved it and half the people hated it.
Yeah, I did not hate it. I didn't mind that ending. I thought I was expecting an ending like that because I know Fargo and, you know, I kind of understand where we're going with that. So I expected the ending. That's not my favorite ending, you're right. But I think in a Coen-esque kind of thing, I think it's the only ending to have. But other than that, everything else that happened, everything just felt like, okay, check that box, if that makes any sense, you know? I mean, every little thing just felt like it had to happen, and they had to put that in there. Nothing surprised me, I guess.
Well, there was some open-ended plot twists that people are thinking don't add up correctly. But, you know, I guess if you subscribe to the theory that life is chaotic and some things go unexplained, then it fits perfectly. You know, but some things like the car. The car stopped running and then the car started running for no reason.
Yeah, right.
Also, Emmett leaves that scene with his phone smashed in the middle of the road that could have easily been tracked right back to him. He also gives his driver's license and registration to the cop and never gets it back from the cop. So what, you know, why don't they just go straight to Emmett after this cop is found?
I mean, I guess we could assume that he cleaned everything up. I mean, I guess we could assume that. They didn't show that. But that stuff wasn't so far-fetched to me. The car stopping and then starting, you know, felt kind of otherworldly, like it had a significance for doing that. So because it is Fargo, I'm going to give it that leeway. Like, that scene needed to happen, you know, not because Holly wanted the scene to happen, but because the character Emmett needed to come in contact with Nikki and it was a great place to do it. But there was a lot about that scene that I didn't like
either. Yeah, but he could have done it. He never leaves the car, I don't think. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, he did. He got out of the car when she was... Well, remember he smashed his phone in the... He got out of the car twice. He smashed his phone.
Well, I mean, after the cop shows up, he's sitting in the car.
He got back out. The cop made him get out. Yeah, he held the gun on him and told him to get out. And he's like, what? What are you doing? I'm talking about her. Remember, he ducked when she fired. He was definitely out of the car.
Yeah, that's true. She was shooting at Emmett, not the cop. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to assume that he cleaned everything up that without them showing it. That doesn't make any sense to me. It would have been, it probably would have been better to me if he hadn't smashed the phone in the road and hadn't, and this all happened right as the cop pulled him over and he hadn't been given a chance to hand over the driver's license.
Right.
And then he drives away clean and free. Nobody ever knows he's there. You know, unless the cop calls something in that would reveal that Emmett's license or something, driver's license plate. What else? So, what do you think the meaning was, somebody to love?
You know, I mean, that was my favorite part about this, and they just continued it even into this episode. The love that these characters had, that the love that Nikki really had for Ray, I mean, as twisted as the story is and as twisted as they were and everything else, I loved that, right? I love the fact that she couldn't care less about the money. I mean, she just wanted, she was just, even though she didn't act like, and we talked about that on that episode, like you would picture somebody acting who was in love with somebody who they had just found out was killed, she did love him. I mean, like, loved him to a fault, it seems like.
Yeah, she not only did not care about the money, she did not care about the direction that the wandering Jew gave her to kill or to stop the evil. She diverted from that to go after the vengeance from the guy to the guy who killed Ray, or who she thought killed Ray.
Well, I think she tried to do that, but then I mean, you know, you and I are just going to not agree on that because I felt like she did what she could with that, but you know, she couldn't. You know, who can kill evil?
Well, she didn't. She didn't accomplish it.
No, she didn't, but, you know, but she did try, and she set up an elaborate scheme to try, and she certainly, you know, put in a lot of effort to do it, and she didn't do it, but it's not like she just said, oh, screw what that guy told me to do, I'm going to just go after Emmett, which she could have done. She didn't want the money anyway, so that whole thing with Varga was to get Varga, and...
Yeah, but she could have failed at that and tried again. Instead, she went after Emmett and that ended her task to be able to get to Varga.
Well, that was one of the scenes, and that was probably my least favorite thing about this whole series. I don't know if you want to talk about it now or just get into the recap or.
How about somebody to love Emmett to Stella?
Exactly. That's what I was... Yeah, I got sidetracked. Absolutely. Stella still loved Emmett. You know, the brothers... Emmett still loved Ray.
I thought the refrigerator scene showed pictures of everything but Ray. Was Ray's picture on that refrigerator?
No, his picture was not on the refrigerator. But when she... pointed out to Emmett what he had done to Ray when she was standing there with that rifle on him. She, he's like, just kill me. He's like, you know, you're right.
Yeah, but that's just cowardly. That's not.
Maybe.
When he survives for 5 years, he doesn't even have any remembrances of Ray when he has all these other tender photos of his family on his refrigerator.
Well, that's
including Sai. His size picture up there.
Well, I think he felt guilty over Sai too, but it was funny. I mean, Nikki got that wrong, too. She thought he had poisoned Sai, and he didn't do that.
Yeah, that's important, though.
Okay.
Nikki's not having any vengeance for Sai's fate.
No, but when she was standing there and she's talking about, oh, I've been following you, how? You know, they never showed us anything about how she could possibly know the inner workings of what was going on. Remember, we talked about this like way back on, I don't know, episode 4 or something, how I felt like she, in the words of Vargas, surmised an awful lot based on nothing that they showed us, how she would know all this stuff. You know, her telling Gloria, follow the money and all this. I mean, there's just, she got all this information, and I didn't feel like that storyline was enough for me, for her to know everything she knew. So I guess I kind of liked the fact that she thought he poisoned Sai, but how did she even know about Sai? How did she even know Sai was in the hospital? How did she even come to the conclusion that he had been poisoned? Nobody said that. Nobody said that about it. And the hospital wasn't saying it or anything. So just all of that kind of stuff really irked me about the story that they were telling. I didn't blame her for her feelings toward Emmett, but I wanted to know where they were coming from, and I didn't feel like that part of the story was told very well.
How about Wrench to Nikki and the Somebody to Love theme? You think Wrench was doing some of this as just his tribute to Nikki, maybe even a love for Nikki?
Absolutely.
An element of thanks, maybe, if not love.
I felt like it was more than that, even. I felt like he probably, in whatever way, you know, maybe not romantically or whatever, but maybe fell in love with Nikki.
It seems like the people who had somebody to love did better than the people who didn't. Like, as soon as Emmett got connected back to Stella, he kind of got back on his feet. Nikki did a lot of things to prove that her connection with Ray was truly love and not, and that kept her going. You know, if nothing else, it exposed her cleverness and her strategy at manipulating being a tactician and attacking people and getting things done.
Right.
And then Wrench, you know, something kept him going for all those 5 years, and maybe it was just vengeance, but maybe it was also that he felt a connection to Nikki. And then Gloria and Nathan, you know, Gloria's put up with a lot of shit in this season. And she always kind of recharged herself when she connected with Nathan, just to talk to him about Christmas or the craziness with his dad, or just to have ice cream or hamburgers or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I thought it was interesting that Paul Moraine meets both Gloria and Nikki. And I don't know if his messages got carried out at all with either of those two women. He helps Gloria, but he doesn't really get, his job is not done. His helpers that he when he enlists the help of Gloria and Nikki, they don't complete the jobs that he wants them to do.
Okay, so what was the job he gave Gloria? I don't remember a job.
Yeah, I don't think it's a job. I think it's just a don't give up in life. You know, he kind of saves her from that asshole cop that was picking her up in that bar.
Right.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact message he gave her, but I think it was like almost a don't give up. So maybe that part isn't so true, that when I say that his message isn't carried out with her, because she's still trying, and who knows what happens in the future with her, and what more good she might do.
Yeah, I think that was another thing, though, with Yuri coming in there and him talking to Yuri. I would have liked to have seen something else on that too. I know you were okay with that, but you know, Yuri's wound did not look like a death wound to me. And I don't know.
It wasn't because he was physically harmed that he had to go to the meet his hell.
Right.
He was, it was just decided by God that it's time for you to face up to what you did in your past. He could have not had any wound. He could have just been, this is your time.
Yeah, he could have just wandered in there. I agree with that as far as the storyline goes. I just thought it wasn't spelled out as clearly as maybe it could have been. I don't know.
Well, you could almost argue then that Nikki's fate was overly spelled out, that she should have died with the arrow wound and the beating, and but she was given a chance to escape. You know, that didn't really add up either. How did she run away with, you know, how did she get out of that with all those wounds and all that physical adversity?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't feel like anything necessarily that she had done. I mean, although a car accident like that and being thrown like that and all, like, I mean, you can have any kind of internal injury that could kill you, you know, I mean, so possibly, but
I just think you're looking in the wrong direction if you're looking for the physical reason, the earthly reason for why, okay, time to go to heaven now, or time to, or you're
sure,
you're still okay to stay on earth. That's, it's not physical, it's just spiritual. All right, you want to jump into it, Michelle?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into it, because there's just, you know, my head's kind of swirling with stuff. But
we got a lot of paperwork to do here.
Yeah, page after page, huh? That's what we start off with, is signatures, handwritten, you know, Emmett's signing things, and then we see on the paper. I loved how they did that, by the way. This is a true story. Gloria's resignation letter, and the rest of the intro on a typed piece of paper beside her typed resignation letter. We see Dollard going over paperwork with the rest of the intro mixed into his paperwork, like laid out, which, I don't know, I'm a sap for that kind of stuff. I really enjoy it. And then we go back to Emmett signing paper after paper after paper with Varga encouraging him. And then we go to Gloria turning in her resignation. We're kind of jumping all the way back and forth. And then Dollard sees a note card in his paperwork that he's missed that says, "We should talk, Gloria Burgle," and it has her phone number on it. So this does mean, and I made a note here, that it was Gloria that did it, right? Because Emmett wouldn't have done that. Even before they told us. Is that what you... Well, you thought Gloria.
No, I thought Nikki.
Nikki, anyway. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Nikki and not Emmett. Because remember, I said last time it might have been Emmett that turned it in because he was going to confess anyway, and that would have been like a no way out kind of situation. But you were convinced it was Nikki, and you were right.
Yeah, because Emmett is pretty freaking evil in this, because he lives these 5 years and does not even go back to the police to tell them the truth about Varga. And who knows what Varga's done in the 5 years, you know?
Yeah, but come on. I mean, Emmett wouldn't. First of all, Varga was gone. I mean, he said we were never here. There was going to be nothing he could do about Varga. And they asked him about Varga when he was there confessing. And he couldn't even make himself do it then, when he still had, you know, before it got as bad as it got. He even made a point that it was, that as he was sitting there, he thought it was as bad as it could get, but it wasn't. So, and he still wouldn't tell on him, wouldn't talk about him. So, you know, if you're talking about Varga as this force of evil, I think it's expecting almost too much of Emmett to come out, considering he doesn't have any way
too much
to turn him in.
He was a weak, weaselly, despicable character. I mean, who knows what Varga rolled on to do in those 5 years to other companies and other people, that Emmett could have said, "Hey, you got to stop this guy. Here's what he did to me." He could have stood up to that, and you know, he could have gotten the police somewhere closer towards Varga.
Could he? How? They had his picture.
He didn't help them at all, Michelle.
I know, but how? How could he have helped them?
Could have told them the M.O. He came in, he gave me a loan. I didn't realize at the time.
They knew that. Dollard said everything you're saying. Dollard told Nikki in this first scene about every bit of that.
Yeah, because he figured it out. Emmett didn't reveal it.
That's right. But you're saying in the 5 years, Emmett didn't come forward and do anything. And I'm just saying, I don't think there's anything he could have done. He could have come forward and talked, and I'm sure he should have done that. But I don't think it would have made any difference in the outcome.
Well, my point is he didn't try. He didn't even try. Even if it didn't do a lick of good, he didn't try. He sat in comfort for 5 years. With his poisoned friend now and at the dinner table, and his dead brother, and you know, not knowing where Varga is and what he might be doing to other people.
You're right. You're right about that. I just don't think it would have, you know, created a different outcome. And but I guess, you know,
if you see somebody in a car accident and they die in the car accident and you just keep driving, there, you couldn't have done anything to help them.
No, but you got to stop. I get the point.
Yeah.
You got to stop and make sure that something you did couldn't have helped. I get that. But Dollard calls Gloria up, and she's just, I mean, she is like packed up her stuff. She is on her way out of the office. Excuse me. She's actually out of the office, and she hears her phone ringing. So she goes back in. He just barely catches her. And he thinks she sent that note, because you would, but she hadn't. And then they start talking about Stussy Lots, and he brings up Emmett Tsai and VM Varga's name. And she's like, who? Now, I felt like she recognized that name, but she couldn't have, right?
VM Varga?
Yeah, when he said, he said that he's looking at a huge case. It looks like they have borrowed $200 million in the last year to line Emmett Tsai and VM Varga's pockets. And she's like, repeat that? You know, that last name. She seemed really, like, interested. She seemed like she knew who.
Well, who didn't know what the VM stood for in the last episode, 309? Wasn't that Gloria?
Was it?
I don't remember. It doesn't shock me that she knows Varga's name.
No, it wasn't Gloria, because remember she asked Emmett his name, and he wouldn't even give her his name.
Well, maybe she got pulled in because LaRue Dollard said Tsai and Emmett. Stussy.
And then the third name, yeah. It looked like, and I think I mentioned it on the upcoming last time, it looked like she recognized the name, but I don't think she did after we ended up watching it. She was just, I think it's like you said, it was the third person that she's been looking for. But she runs back into the office where she's just laid her resignation letter and grabs it back up. Okay, then Nikki's assigning cards to her weapons and telling Wrench that they'll call in 10 minutes, and she's signing. So what do you think about that? I mean, she's pretty industrious, right?
She seemed to know sign language in the bus, unless it was just, like, amateurish sign language and not official deaf person sign language. I don't know how she could have known it, but she seemed to know it in the bus when she first crossed paths with Wrench.
Yeah, I kind of got that, too, but then we never saw her do it again, so I assumed that it was just, you know, her doing hand gestures to try to get, you know, to try to speak with him, but I don't know. Okay, then we come back, and VM Varga is telling Emmett that he should be happy with his accumulation of wealth. And now this is where Emmett's putting his head down. He's so tired. And what do you think about that scene? I mean, Varga's awful here, right? And he's very wolf-like. He says that's what happens in the wild. Smaller animals going limp in the jaws of larger animals. Food knows its food sometimes.
Yeah, he was just making a very nature-like observation that you're defeated and you put your head down like a tired bunny rabbit and I'm a wolf or something.
Well, Varga gets a call, and it's Nikki, and she's telling him what we assume it is. I mean, you know, but you can tell. But he even warns her that he's bringing firepower. Now, there's guys all over the place. He's got, like, a whole group of armed, heavily armed men. He tells them he's going to bring these armed men with him, so don't try any funny stuff. Do you think he was actually just going to give her the money? Because I do.
What do you mean he was just going to give her the money?
Do you think he was actually going to trade that money for those
I don't know why they even brought money to this thing. Because unless it's to show it to them and then get the hard drives, you know, I mean, why even bother bringing the money if you're just going to kill them? Are you just going
to... I don't think they were. I don't think he was. I think he was actually going to pay the money. I mean, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It's like you said otherwise. It doesn't make any sense. And he even warned her that he was coming, but he was worried about her trying something. That's why he brought the armed guys, I thought. Not because he was going to try something. Did you get a different take?
Well, I mean, either way, criminals bring backup whether they're going to try something or they're afraid you're going to try something.
Right, but I'm just saying, did you get a feeling that it was going to be him that was going to try something, or did you think it was her that he thought she was going to try something, and that's why he brought it?
Well,
that's
both. How I think if he could have, he would have grabbed the hard drives and killed her and not given her anything. I think he wanted her dead.
Yeah, probably, but it really doesn't matter to him. I don't think, you know, I mean, I'm sure just in a general way, he would want her dead, but I don't think he feels like she's much of a real threat to him, although she turns out to be more of a threat than anticipated.
Yeah, I really don't think much of this matters really too much either. Like the money, it clearly didn't matter at all to Nikki. I don't think the hard drives even mattered that much to Varga. He's caught. He's sitting in a retention cell with Gloria, and he's not even worried. People are going to walk in here and let me right back out. So I think those are MacGuffins just to keep us on track with the good versus evil.
Okay.
So I never even really, until you just asked it, I didn't really care. I didn't really think about it. Like, was she really going to get the money? She didn't really ever care. We had this little bit of an argument before that she probably would have taken the money if she got the money in the hotel lobby. But she wasn't really after the money. She was really after the revenge of Ray.
Right. But I'm glad they showed us the money. I'm glad they showed us that she didn't want the money. I thought that was a really important part of the story. Had that case been empty, it would not have been nearly as powerful.
See, I don't think so. Because I don't think the money mattered to me at all. Because it didn't matter to Nikki.
No, but the fact that it didn't matter to Nikki, that's how they told us that it didn't matter to her.
But we already knew that from the hotel's lobby scene.
How'd we know?
Because she said, what do you got in there, your old underwear?
Yeah, but she was still pressing him for the money. So I think there was still a question, you know, that's why she called him back. That was the guise of why she called him back anyway. So there was still the question of, did she want this money? You know, and she's been kind of money hungry the whole time. We've heard money, money. You know, she's the one who kind of put Ray up to...
So why didn't she keep half the money when she gave it all to Wrench?
Because I felt like the story was that that money was for, you know, like for Ray. I mean, she didn't want to keep that money. She wanted... Like, that would not have been... okay for her, that she loved Ray so much that she did not want that money. And without the money there, I wouldn't have known how much the money didn't mean to her without her looking at it.
We don't have to go more laps around and around this, but I think the hotel lobby, she was scoping out Varga to see, this first time she ever met him really and really interacted with him. She's scoping him out. She probably knew, what did she say, 60% it's underwear and 40% it's money. She didn't care. Somebody gives her $1 million, she's going to like it and keep it, but that wasn't her motivation. Her motivation was like settling this debt because of Ray.
Sure, but we've been arguing the whole time about how does she really feel about him, and I personally love that part of the story. It was powerful to me, whether it was, you know, whether it really meant anything or not. But we're skipping all over the place. We're still back with Emmett, where he was signing money, and he sees Mimo's gun, and he
signing
finally,
money, signing papers. Here, give me that 20. I'll sign it.
Yeah. Okay.
Michelle, you're obsessed with money. You got to. Yeah. It's really not that big of a deal.
Take two. Click. Okay. Emmett was signing paperwork, and he sees Mimo's gun once he's done, and he makes a grab for it. Now, why would he do that if he's not going to use that gun?
Well, that was... he was going to use it, but he was he's a dupe. Varga told him it had a fingerprint sensor on it.
That was so funny. I mean, come on. Now he lets Mimo get behind him. That was crazy. But Varga goes into these stories talking about the old days that only the strong were rich. And then he starts talking about technology and handguns and having a fingerprint scanner to keep it from being used by anyone but its owner, which is actually a really good idea. But
until it doesn't work right.
Well, there you go. But it duped Emmett. And Emmett goes to look. Varga squirts him in the eye with his breath spray. And Mimo knocks him out. And then this was that scene where he says, "We were never here." And I thought that was kind of an, you know, Malvo-y, Shigur kind of thing.
Yeah, even Vargo-y, he said that before. Maybe I'm not even here. Maybe I don't even exist.
Right. Okay, then we see... Was it the kid playing the drums outside on that shack?
I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
When that kid showed up at the window and started talking to Varga, I thought that was going to be Mimo as a kid somehow. Because they showed Varga, but they didn't show Mimo, but then they showed Mimo again. But that little kid looked kind of Occidental-ish, like Asian. Like he looked like he could have been a version of Mimo as a kid. And we saw the other guy that looked like version of Mimo as a fat guy with a scar.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
But then they panned back and Mimo's still driving the car, so.
Do you think Nikki would have... It just seems so odd to use a child to lure these people with these guns in there. It seemed like a not very safe thing to do.
Yeah,
I didn't like that. I didn't like that about her. There was a couple things, and we'll get to some of the others. But
Nikki was not a good person. She dropped an air conditioner on Gordon.
Well, see, we're going to have to talk about that, too. But let's at least wait till we get to that scene, because we are all over the place with this. But so the kid walks up to the car, and he's speaking Spanish, but he says swango, and so they start following him. And I was sure that Varga would have understood Spanish. I mean, as well-traveled and everything as he is, but he didn't seem to understand it. So that was surprising to me and very human-esque.
Well, why do you think they didn't understand? He wanted them to follow, and that's what they did.
Yeah, but he said something to him, and Varga looked confused. You know, I mean, he said, you know, vamanos to him, so it was kind of like he did. But
well,
then
he might have just been confused, like, why is this little kid in play? You know,
I thought
we were meeting to talk to people about exchanging money for hard drives. What's this kid doing? Anyway.
Maybe you're right. I just kind of got that feeling. But the kid starts walking. Everybody starts following on foot. They go into a storage place, King Midas Storage, which is kind of funny because, you know, king of parking lots and king of grocery stores and I guess, you know, king of storage somewhere. But I mean, I know King Midas, but anyway, I thought it was funny to have King in it. But they're very hesitant to go in.
Yeah, also the elevator scene from season one with Malvo where he just kills the other people in the elevator.
Yeah.
Look what you've done. I'm sorry I had to do that, but look what you made me do. It's like elevators are kind of evil to go into.
Yeah. Well, one of the men goes in first and gives the all clear, and then Varga comes in. There's a sign on the floor saying third floor, locker 327. They decide to split up the elevators, which, you know, I guess you would. But there seems to be this camera in the elevator, which I didn't know what it was. I thought somebody was watching them, but they never really showed us anything else. And I was wondering, you know, is Varga going to even show up on this? What's going to go on? But none of that happened. But on the third floor, it was kind of intense, kind of tense. It's seemingly deserted. Varga is holding the elevator door open, and they're looking through there because he didn't want the elevator to close because they'll be stuck. And an alarm goes off, and they go into this empty room with a table and a note that says, leave the money. The drives are in unit 209. And then Varga gets a text that says, IRS has the drives. Get out.
Right.
So who was that?
Nikki. Nikki wants Varga by himself for herself to kill him.
Why would you have to kill him by himself?
Because he doesn't have a backup team of machine gunners with him. It's more personal. It's just me and you, Varga. I'm the good messenger sent to kill off you, the evil force.
Okay. All right.
I think it was to separate him from the crew.
Yeah, but I mean, how? I don't know. I just wouldn't have thought that would have separated him from them. But you know, Varga. I mean.
Well, Varga's maybe like she evil. Was he's watching. Not like, come on, guys, we all got to get out of here. He's just going to run. Right. He's going to bail. He's going to leave his guys behind in jeopardy and just bail himself.
Right, which is what he does. Since he's sitting there holding the door open, he gets in. Another storage unit starts opening. And, you know, you can tell somebody's coming after him. And he just lets the elevator door close to Mimo. I mean, Mimo even standing there.
Mimo and, Nomo.
No. That's really bad. But on the elevator, Varga's looking nervous. When it opens, Nikki's standing there with a weapon, and Varga's gone.
Yeah, he shed his snake overcoat skin like a reptile.
He did, and the ceiling tile's missing. So
it was a lot like this massacre. We didn't see any of it, but it was a lot like the Malvo massacre in the business office in season one, too, where you just kind of heard the shots.
Yeah. Yeah, and the screams and stuff like that. Well, then Wrench comes down in the other elevator with the bloody briefcase full of cash that Nikki doesn't want. She only wants Emmett.
She takes brother. I just want the brother.
Right. She takes a couple stacks for good measure, and that's it. But now, Varga had to have still been in that building. You would think that, you know, you're right. I hadn't thought about that, but they could have went after Varga. If they had gotten everybody else.
Varga should be in the building. Shiger should be in the hotel room. It's all... You can't be pinned down by physics. You're right, though. He climbs up. So he's higher up now. How is he out of the building? There's right. No earthly explanation.
Right. Well, back at Emmett's house, we pan across the empty table that contains the real weapon that's cost Emmett so much, the mighty pen. And then down to him on the floor with the Sisyphus stamp on his forehead. Now, is this something Varga did? You think Varga put that stamp?
No, I think Nikki did that.
Nikki wasn't in Emmett's house. Nikki hasn't gotten a hold of Emmett yet.
Maybe it was Varga, but what I have a question for you. Do you think that's the real valuable stamp?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
I do too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know who stuck it to his head. I put Nikki ? So,
yeah, I don't think she's seen him yet. But he feels the blood on the back of his head, and he goes looking around to see if they're all gone, and they are. And it is as if they were never there. He goes outside, still with his stamp on his forehead. He doesn't know when he goes to get in his car. In his reflection, he sees the stamp. And this was just stunning to me. He pulls it off and throws it on the ground and drives away. That to me was like the face slap of this whole episode. That was much more stunning than Nikki getting shot in the forehead, spoiler, or anything else. Because this stamp was what you could say, you know, the love of this stamp caused this whole thing. And that's how much value he actually put into that stamp.
Well, or he's throwing away the cause of this catastrophe.
I guess, but
he's throwing away money. Like, oh, money, I don't care about. It's just he's throwing away a curse, essentially.
Yeah, but he didn't treat it like that. He didn't treat it like, oh, I can't believe this is there. Let me, you know, bury this or burn this or do something to really get rid of it. He drops it in his driveway. It just didn't have any meaning to him. It was like a power thing, I think. And it just made me really dislike him a lot.
Well, I think dropping it in the driveway to the cares of the wind is the same as lighting it on fire or burying it. It's just like, hey, I'm done with you. I leave you behind in my life.
Maybe, but it didn't have that significance to me. I just thought it was just, you know, just careless, just drop it. You know, that was what Ray wanted, to change their whole relationship. And it was like, no, 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 even though he had everything else. And then that's how much it actually, that was its value to him. It was just terrible. But then he pulls up to Stussy Lots and they're replacing the signs with realignment. He has no idea what's going on. The office is full of people taking stuff, moving stuff. He goes into his office and it's the Widow Goldfarb. Now, what'd you think about that?
Kind of makes sense. Although they gave her, she's in a kind of a different role here than she's been in the other few times that we've seen her. Now she's kind of like a smart businesswoman that got a killer deal from Varga, and she played an evil role, certainly, in taking this company over at a cut rate price. But she wasn't the same person. She wasn't the mysterious, ethereal, predator type woman. She looked like a businesswoman in a business suit.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of, y'all want to say, let down by that?
She wasn't what I thought she was going to be. I thought she might be some sort of a force that could help bring down Varga, but it turns out she was working with Varga. She's pretty evil. She's pretty despicable. She knew all along what was going on, and she let Cy and Emmett woo her all along, knowing that Varga was going to pull this rug out from under them. And, you know, they got profit from what Varga did to them, but she
wasn't. Okay, well then, let me ask you this. You know, what is the meaning of this? What was the point of her meeting with Cy and Emmett? In any of it, just to give us a taste of her or something, because there was no point in it that I can see.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Varga found out she was interested in their company. Maybe she truly was interested at one point. Varga found out about it and then said, this would be the perfect conclusion to my scam on these guys, is I'll sell it to her after I take all the money and run with it.
Okay, well, that would make more sense, at least in the storyline.
But she'd never warned them. She never said, you know, this guy Varga's talking to me behind your guy's back, and you guys are idiots, because what he's trying to do is X, Y, and Z. She just lets it happen.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that that it was set up like that to begin with, only because they got her name from the same person they got Ermentrop's name.
So, yeah, it could have been. It's all, you know, you got to remember that Holly, the other speculation about all this is that he's just making comments on the current status of the politics and the 2%ers and greed and wealth and all this, that the rich do whatever they can do to keep getting richer at the expense of people less in the know than them and people that have less advantage than them. And you'd put Varga and Goldfarb and kind of this scheming upper 2% class that Noah Hawley is pretty clearly making comment on. They'll do anything to keep getting richer.
Yeah, I was thinking, because I thought I read something where Hawley, and I could be wrong, so I probably shouldn't even say it, but I could have sworn I read something where Hawley said that it was not about anything about current anything, that it was just his story. But I could be wrong about that, because they were talking about, you know, 5 years later is going to put, you know, people at now, and have they thought about that? And, you know, and he said no, that it was just, you know, he just thought, okay, 5 years later or something. But anyway, I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think he almost always answers with, well, whatever you think it is, that's what my goal right. is, to get you to think and you to decide. Right. It's kind of a Weasley way, you know, out of it. He clearly doesn't like social media and stuff, though. He made fun of all that, you know, the idiot people turning on the computer and getting their picture taken and thrown off a garage roof. It's like he's clearly saying to me, anyway, that's how I'm interpreting, that those who are all wrapped up in social media too deeply are just sort of idiots. So.
Yeah, he also made a point, something about, you know, how deep people will dig. We're talking about the names, the Paul, what was his last name?
Massara.
And how that was never even mentioned in the show.
Yeah.
But
his name was Paul. I'm sure, you're sure it wasn't?
I think he said that it ended up on the cutting room floor, that they had it in there. But it ended up on the cutting room floor, I think is what he said.
Because I think it's in the cast.
In the credits, right. Right, that's what they said. They said, or not the credits, but in the cast. And they said, you know, you would have to go to the cast to find out this information. I hope I'm not butchering this story, but it was something like that. And he was like, you know, he said he likes to add layers to it, that if you want to look deeper, sometimes you find stuff. He goes, but there again, he goes, everything in there does not have a hidden meaning. Some things just are. And so he doesn't necessarily want people to try to look for every little thing, which was funny because that's kind of what you just said about, you know, look if you want to, you know, don't if you don't, kind of, you know, take it how you want to take it. So
yeah, but if he said that, I don't believe him, because he's talking about the TSA, he's talking about social media, he's talking about 2% type people taking over companies and looting them, and he's talking about all these things by putting them in his story. You know, he put them in there for a reason.
I'll have to find the article and send it to you. I could have totally, you know, been spazzing when I read it.
No, even if he said that in an article, I believe he could have said that in an article and misled everybody who read the article.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Because look at the story. I mean, Gloria's a Homeland Security agent now, you know, and now she's kind of looking like, does he have one up on me? Is somebody going to come in and let this guy go? You know, it's making Homeland Security look less official and authoritative than it probably is. Anyway.
Well, back to the Whittle Gold Farm. She says that Stussy lots were sold out to realignment this morning for a very generous, on Emmett's part, $100,000. Oh, and by the way, you're $300 million in debt, so you might want to file Chapter 11. But don't worry, because your personal wealth is hidden, so it's not all bad. And then the security guards come and carry him out.
Yeah, I liked how Noah Hawley put Mike and your husband and I in this episode.
What?
Doesn't Goldfarb say, hey, Mike and Mike, show him out?
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's funny.
It's either Mike and Mike or Mike and Ike, or it was two names that sounded like Mike.
That's funny. I did not notice that. So then Gloria is with Dollard, and he's explaining what they did, that they got a $1 million loan from Norwal, which isn't real. And then he goes into one company buying a company and strip mining it for profit is actually a legal thing if they pay the taxes, but they didn't. And there's evidence of the money going to offshore accounts in MSI and VMV's name. Did you get anything else?
Yeah, so this is another comment by Hawley on corporate misdeeds. You can go in.
That is not new, though.
No, right? Of course not. Wolf of Wall Street. You can go in.
That's what it was. Damn, I thought forever. I kept trying to think, what is the name of that movie that this was about? And that's what it was. You're right.
Well, I don't think I'm just saying that as an example of what corporate raiders do. They can go in and, you know, take over a company, take out all the retirement money, declare bankruptcy. It's not illegal. It's not good. I mean, it's not very ethical, but it's not illegal to do that. Or take out $200 million in loans and then just default. Send the money off to your private account somewhere. As long as you pay the taxes, technically it's not illegal. It's illegal to not pay the taxes, but, you know, much of what they did that was very evil was not illegal.
So if Varga had just paid the taxes on that, then they wouldn't have been after him?
Well, he doesn't want to pay the taxes because he wants all the money. And he killed people. You know, there were people killed along the way, too.
Well, right, but that's not what they were even looking at him for. No, I mean, you know, they end up...
I think this is Noah Hawley's statement on what corporations can do and still stay technically legal. Attached it to Varga, it's a difficult thing to say. He did nothing illegal because this was a story all embellished with all these dramatic.
Sure.
But technically, you could take over a company, take out a bunch of loans, then file for bankruptcy, and somebody loses somewhere, right? That money comes from somewhere, and it's all technically legal.
But I kept trying to think that there was a movie, and it was a long time ago. I mean, Wolf of Wall Street's not a new movie, and it was about this exactly.
Well, there's Wolf of Wall Street with Leonardo DiCaprio, and then there's Wall Street with Michael Douglas. I think you're thinking of Wall Street, where they raid the pension funds of the aircraft mechanics.
And that was when? I mean, that movie was on in the 80s or 90s or something, maybe. Yeah. So,
what's his name? Who's Martin Sheen's son? Charlie Sheen,
yeah. Okay, then we get Bloody Mimo being wheeled out of the bloodbath. Winnie is there, and she's saying it's carnage, and they have a video picture of Wrench, who Gloria doesn't know, and Nikki.
And Mimo's dead, right?
I'm assuming he didn't look dead, but surely he's dead, right?
Yeah, he wasn't in a body bag, but his eyes were open and he was full of bullet holes and blood all over him. I'm calling him dead.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought he was dead. Gloria says she's the one who notified the IRS that that Nikki did, and now she's after Emmett. So Winnie's like, why? And she said, well, he killed her man. And then she's got to go warn Emmett. So now Gloria is after Emmett, too, to warn him about Nikki. Okay, then we get that perfect Fargo picture. I'm going to miss that. I'm telling you. I'm going to miss those cinematography shots. With Emmett driving his car down a deserted two-lane flat road, and his car starts dinging, and then it stops. He gets out and goes to make a call. There's no service. I was kind of wondering there if it wasn't going to be like Gloria's misfunction had transferred to him or something. Because remember, she got it back last time. And then
it's also a little surprising that Emmett, who lives here and probably has driven on that road millions of times, would be surprised. Like, God damn it, my phone doesn't work. Like, he should know, okay, I'm in this stretch where my phone never works.
And even if you're mad because you're not getting reception, I mean, sometimes you can walk 10 feet and get reception, right? You don't throw your phone and stomp it.
Well, even if your phone doesn't work, you don't throw your phone and stomp it.
Oh, right. But I mean, you know, even if it didn't work right this second, it could work literally in 30 seconds foot walk down the road. I don't know. He flags down a truck. It's this big Ford truck. It's a great picture with tinted windows, and Nikki gets out with her gun. So what did you think about this whole scene?
I couldn't understand why she was so mad at Emmett, but I guess we have to believe that she didn't know that it was an accident with Ray and Emmett. She probably thinks Emmett stabbed him or something. Emmett's an idiot. He didn't kill Ray maliciously. He was mean to him, but I didn't understand her vengeance against Emmett.
Well, she was mad at Emmett from the very beginning. You know, the killing of Ray was just the icing on the cake, so to speak, for her. She didn't like him from the get-go.
She was killing him for 8 years, and this is just the time that he fell?
Right. No, she was killing him, you know, for the stamp. No, I think she did think that he killed him, although, I mean, how would she even think that? How did she even know that? Do we know how she knew? How did she even know Emmett was there? You know, she was hurt and in the hotel room, and we just never got any of that story. And he didn't kill him. It was an accident. That was an accident. He did not kill him. He didn't even really behave in a way that would that a reasonable person wouldn't behave, because you would think it would be a danger to somebody else. I mean, how many times have you particularly with a brother or something, you know, they hand you something, you push it back at them. I mean, it wasn't even, I mean, think about the times you've roughhoused with your brother and tell me that this was in any way comparable to some of the roughhousing.
Right, but she thinks he stole his life, his chance at affluence by keeping the stamp from him, and he's been keeping him down his whole life. It wasn't that he just killed him. It was like you kind of stole his life away.
No, but she does say he killed him, and she's, and you know, maybe he, like you said, had been killing him for 30 years, and that was just the, you know, the time he fell. But she also says he poisoned his best friend. He didn't do that either. So wherever she's gotten her information, which they didn't really allow us to see, it's in error. But then he says he didn't mean to. Emmett doesn't even defend himself. You know, he has never defended himself with anybody. He didn't even, like, and I don't mean defend yourself going, well, I didn't do that. I mean defend yourself saying, well, I did and I feel horrible, but let me tell you what actually happened because I feel terrible about it. I mean, he didn't do any of that. But he wants to call his wife and she says he can't because he smashed his phone. And then she's, I literally, thank goodness for this comic relief, when she says Ray is a kitten now.
Yeah.
Did you laugh? I literally laughed. It was like,
no,
okay, I need this.
I was disappointed in this scene because she didn't fulfill her heavenly chore. And Ray being a kitten was very profound to me. It's cute, I guess. It's silly. But for me, I took that whole bowling alley thing as a very cool, profound scene. And here she is dicking around with Emmett when she should be fulfilling her the charter given to her by...
Okay, but we're going to have to talk about this because I'm going to disagree with you and I'm going to tell you why, okay? It's kind of, you know, I agree that, you know, I mean, but I felt like she said it with meaning. You know, Ray is a kitten now. And I felt like she wanted to talk to somebody who had love for Ray, like she did. And I felt like that was meaningful to her.
And I felt like she thought it would be important for Emmett to know your brother isn't totally gone. He's a kitten now. That's profound for her to say that to Emmett.
Well, she says that he left him on the floor with sadness in his eyes, his own brother, and that she didn't get a chance to say goodbye. I guess meaning, why should I give you a chance to say goodbye to your wife? And that's where he tells her to do it. Just shoot him, put him out of his misery. Or he starts to say misery. And this is where she starts reciting the passage from Obadiah. Right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, Obadiah, not very well.
I thought she did. I mean, she did okay. But anyway, Obadiah is one of the books that tells us of the two brothers, Jacob and Esau. Do you know that story?
No.
Okay, Jacob tricked his brother Esau into giving up his birthright for a bowl of lentil stew. And Esau got mad because he was tricked, but it's also argued that he didn't value his birthright to have given it up so willingly. So that's the story. So if he had her reciting this to the person she was going after, isn't she maybe going after the right person?
Not in the eyes of the wandering Jew.
Well, he's the one who told her what to say.
Yeah, you know? But for the other guy, for Varga, for the powerful evil, not the stooge, Emmett's not important. Emmett's not going to go around and inflict evil on people. He's a coward. He's bad in that he doesn't report what he should report. He doesn't help people he should help. But he's not a force of evil like Varga is. That the goal with Paul Massar and Nikki was to go after the main evil.
I don't necessarily, I mean, I think you're probably right, but I think it is interesting the kind of biblical take that they're doing on that about the brothers and the birthright and that whole thing.
Yeah, but these two brothers were both idiots put into play against each other by life and stupid, petty contrivances. Varga goes around killing and wounding and ruining people's lives.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no comparison for sure.
Like, the message from Paul to Nikki wasn't, go out and take care of any evil you can find, and whenever you find it, say this cool statement. It was, go after this main force of evil. That's your role. That's your importance in being from this time forward. Maybe I would have taken you to heaven right here and now, but I'm not. I'm going to leave you on Earth to do this important job. Not to take out Emmett. Anyway, well, that's what I'm going to believe.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. You've given me a lot to think about it, but I don't know. But then the car's coming up, and she tells him to get back in his car. So he does get back in his car. It's the police. Nikki tells him they're fine. The police gets out of the car. He says it's not a parking lot. She says, at the end of this story, we all go home.
Just like Lorne Malvo with
Ron. Right.
Hanks.
Wasn't that great, though?
Yeah, but, you know, a cop, Colin Hanks kind of ruined it for cops by going home, right? Most cops aren't gonna buy into that. They're going to stand their ground and do their duty, I think.
Sure.
Like this guy does.
Well, he asked her to step away from the car and ask Emmett for his license and registration, and Emmett tells him that... Why does Emmett suddenly change his story here? Because just a moment ago, he's telling her to kill him, you know? And now he's telling the cops she's got a gun.
Well, now he can save himself. He's cowardly.
Well, the cop tells him to get out, and he's like, no, me, why? Why me? You know, it's her. It's her. And Nikki's able to get a hold of her gun, and all you hear is one gunshot. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, he sees what she's doing. Emmett does. He ducks. She shoots the cop. The cop shoots her. And all
well,
I heard
was I think she shoots gun. Emmett. She shoots at Emmett. Emmett ducks and the cop's right there. I don't think she shoots at the cop.
I don't disagree with that.
I think at this point she's like, okay, this is my one last chance. I'm going to get arrested. I'm just going to take Emmett out. Emmett ducks, though, and she gets the cop and the cop gets her.
But you're right. You were absolutely right, though. I argued before that he could have gotten, you know, cleaned up and everything. But in my notes right here, I've got that Emmett gets in the car. It starts with no trouble, and he drives off. So you're right. They did show him, as soon as it happened, get in the car and drive away. So he did not get back his license and registration. He did not pick up his phone.
Yeah, so we're asked to believe a lot. We're asked to suspend our belief of a lot of facts and figures and things that we should question. That I guess is okay. We've seen an outer space robot animation, and we've seen people walk into a little heavenly bowling alley, and we've seen guys escape from we've seen a lot. So I guess that's what it is.
Well, then Gloria comes up, and she's standing there at this scene and watching them load everybody up, and that was that scene. And then we go to another jury Fargo scene, but this time it's the police chasing a school bus, and I didn't know what was going on. But then we see that it's Gloria getting Nathan out, and they're having ice cream, and they're talking. And she kind of has the talk about his grandpa and that she wants him to not know the real violence in the world and be a boy while he can, and she wants him to just stick together. So
this is like the
right.
Third time she's done this with the school bus. This is how she gets Nathan off the bus. She pulls it over.
Yeah, or even has Donnie do it before, remember?
Yeah, but that's, hey, go tell Nathan. Okay, I'll go pull over 40 kids and make everybody wait while we go get Nathan.
It's really funny. But then we have this black and whitish scene with Emmett driving up to somebody's house, and I didn't know where he was, but he was at Stella's house, I guess, her new house. She comes to the door. He falls to his knees sobbing. And you can tell that she still loves him. She reaches out and she hugs him.
Would you have taken him back, Michelle?
Well, he didn't even do anything to her, you know? I mean, that's
just it. Well,
she thought
he was screwing somebody on that video.
Well, we're going to assume that he explained that to her because
would you have taken him back?
If he explained that it wasn't him, yeah.
Okay.
Then we see 5 years later, Emmett saying a prayer with his family over this huge meal. Cy and his wife are there. and Sai was propped up in a wheelchair, and I didn't know how that was going to go. But and then they start throwing up these words. Emmett declared bankruptcy in 2011. He pled to a misdemeanor. It's believed but cannot be proven that Mr. Stussy has as much as $20 million hidden in an offshore account. So we end with more hidden money, right? We do this every time, it seems like, right? Hidden money or money that's found somewhere or something.
Yeah.
Thought that was interesting for a setup, maybe for something else.
We'll finish the scene by scene. I have some.
Okay. Well, Emmett asks Sai how he's doing, and it takes him a while, but he finally says, good as new. Emmett notices that the salad's gone. Do people really call Jell-O a salad?
I think in the Midwest they do.
Really? Okay. And Stella says it's in the fridge. He gets up to go, and like you said, there's pictures all over the front of the fridge. He's got, evidently his daughter's gotten married. Her husband's there. They got a baby. The son's there. Sai's there, Sai's wife's there, and all these pictures and everything are up, but you're right, no way.
Emmett and Sai's picture is the biggest picture, most prominent picture. Right. More even than Emmett and Stella.
But it was an old picture. What'd you think about that?
Well, that's because Sai's not in very good shape lately. It's 5 years of being in whatever poisoned condition he's in.
Rough stuff. Well, a smile comes to his face. He opens the fridge. There's this ugly Jell-O, red, blood red Jell-O in there. Salad. And then we see a gun. Salad. We see a gun behind him, and it pans to Wrench, and we hear the gunfire. Okay, then we come back from a commercial. Gloria's working for Department of Homeland Security. She's been called in because face recognition.
So, Michelle, just as a thought about that last scene with the gun, with Wrench, uh-huh. I put in my notes, just as evil never sleeps, neither so does justice, that Emmett got justice was served upon Emmett here by Wrench, even though it took a long time, 5 years he waited. You know, Emmett had to think he was totally in the clear. Right, this is 5 years in his rearview mirror, and
right.
He's having dinner with everybody, and all of a sudden he's attacked by the person from that 5 year.
Well, and we kind of skipped over it because there was so much talk about in that scene, but I thought it was also interesting that Nikki killing that policeman that's when she got killed. Everything else that we saw Nikki do, and you talked about her pushing a air conditioner on Maurice, but everything that she has done has been she's had a reason for doing it. You know, I mean, there's been something that she could at least validate a reason for doing it. But as soon as she killed the policeman, I mean, as soon as she did something that there was no reason for, like as soon as she crossed into evil, she was gone.
And I think her afterlife is not going to be a good one. I think she had the chance of a good afterlife by helping the messenger, Paul, do what he asked her to do, and she didn't do it. She failed at it. I don't think she's going to a happy place. I think she's kind of Emmett-y, kind of maybe even Yuri-like, in that they didn't do what they could have done, the best they could have done. She was a bad actor, you know, a bad criminal. Not a bad actor. She's a good actor, but a bad criminal actor, you know.
Okay, well, then we go to that room where Gloria is sitting with Daniel Rand, who sells accounting software. And he's telling her his story, and she's like, you don't remember me, do you? And he says that word again from episode one, you know, surmise, because I didn't greet you, I don't remember you. But I don't think he does remember her.
That's very interesting to me that he doesn't know her and remember her.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to. You know, evil doesn't need to know your name.
Ooh. Dang, okay. She shows him the picture of him in the elevator.
You could walk into a liquor store and come up on a robbery and just be killed. Right, evil's just—it's just random sometimes.
That's a very interesting way to think about that. But he's saying that photography can be doctored. She said there's 6 people dead, including a state trooper, $200 million accounted for. And he says a man wakes up one morning, decides to kill 4 men over a certain age, over a certain name. And she said, but it didn't happen that way. And he says whether it did or not, when a verdict is made, to argue that is to argue with reality itself. So he's really twisting things, you know? And she tells him about Emmett being dead and all that. And he says, was it pitchfork peasants? And then he goes into how people's value are based on how much money they make. A man's value is on how much money he makes. And Emmett's death is more tragic than someone who had no money. And she asked him if he killed Emmett. So they don't even know who killed Emmett. So we know Wrench is still out there. And then she says 3 agents are going to take him to Rikers, and she's going home with her son, whose birthday is tomorrow. She's going to take him to the state fair and guess a pig's weight and eat a deep-fried Snicker bar. The food is what gets Varga's attention. Otherwise, he's just like zoned out on her, but she starts talking about the food.
Well, she says something about, I hope you enjoy your mashed potatoes.
Yeah, she says he'll be eating boxed mashed potatoes in a dark room and to think of her.
Which is the modemic. When you mash potatoes, that's what you get, mashed potatoes.
Yeah. And he just says no. And then he says that's not what's going to happen next. In 5 minutes, a man's going to enter the room and tell him he's free to go, and he'll disappear. And she says, sir, for me, and she says, Rikers and Snicker bars, you'll see. And he whispers, he's got this really creepy voice now, and he whispers, Gloria, trust me. Your future is set, and when it comes, you'll know without question your place in the world. Until then, we've said all there is to say. Any further debate would be simply wasting our breath. And if there's one thing I can't abide, it's waste. And I thought, ha, you know, because we see him like gorge on all this food and then, you know, refund it and everything. And then he says goodbye, and the lights go out. And I thought he was going to disappear for a second, didn't you? Or did you?
No. I know he's getting out of there, but I didn't think he was going to just disappear.
Well, we pay into
the clock. Reminding me of something, Michelle. Did you say that you didn't think that Gloria had met Varga before?
No, I know she met him, but every time she's met him, she asked for his name. I mean, that one time she met him, she asked for his name. He wouldn't give it. And then she asked Emmett for his name when he was in jail confessing, and he wouldn't give it to her.
Yeah. Well, no one probably knows it. But I'm remembering the scene where she was talking to him before, and he said, you know, in 1938, there were 24 Hitlers in the German phone book. And she's like, 24, huh? Like, you're just full of shit, dude. You're making up stuff as you go.
Right.
So she knows, you know, he's a bullshitter.
Right. Yeah, he even said something in this scene about, the past not being true reality or something. I'm butchering that, but something to that effect.
The past is unpredictable.
Yes. And she's like, or that's a Russian saying or something. And she's like, you're just making that up. And he goes, maybe.
Yeah.
But then we stare at the clock. We're looking out the glass door.
He says, we see what we believe, not the other way around. We don't believe what we see. We see what we believe.
Right.
So you kind of make it up into being what you believe you saw versus what you really saw.
Which is kind of what Holly wants us to do, right? We kind of make it up. We decide in our own mind not see it, but we kind of, you know, well, kind of. We kind of see what we believe.
Yeah, and that kind of is reflective of that Berlin scene in the beginning, too. That guy, I see it this way. So I'm believing it this way, even though I don't have any facts to support it. This is what I believe.
Right. And that's the end of season 3.
So what do you think happens, Michelle? Who comes through the door?
I don't know who, but somebody, maybe Mo. I don't know. Maybe Mo's went to the Department of Homeland Security and he's higher up than Gloria. I don't know.
That's somebody, not Mo. Mo.
I know.
It's the conspiracy. It's the serial killer again. We've got the murderer. Let him go.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The only thing that would have been better or not better, but the only thing that would have felt more not even that, but the only thing that would have made it feel better to me is if the cop who had pulled up there had been Mo in place of that random guy who gets shot by Nikki. I didn't like that.
Yeah, but random fits the theme of fate being random. That guy did nothing wrong. He just pulled over traffic. You know, it wasn't even a traffic stop. He's just driving down the road and like, hey, this isn't a parking lot. I'm going to check this out.
Right.
And then he ends up getting killed. He ends up interrupting certainly Emmett's certain death. And for 5 years, he gets another 5 years of life. And, you know, Nikki might have survived forever had he not come along.
Yeah. And she might have even went after Varga or something.
Well, like she should have. So Noah Hawley said, Michelle, I always joke that Fargo is a tragedy with a happy ending. But that ending in this case is up to you. It could be a happy ending if you're an optimist, and it could be a darker ending if you're a pessimist.
Hmm. So what are we?
I don't think I define it as happy or unhappy. I think it is what it is. Because I really believe, beyond the Coen brothers and the Hawley brother, that there is really evil in the world, and I don't think it'll ever be stamped out. It's just something we have to do our best. It's always like, do your best, because, you know, that's all you can do.
Yeah, well, I didn't think it was happy at all. I thought it was very tragic. Like, all Fargo is tragic. And in this one, you know, like in the other Fargos, we've gotten some hope. I think they've left us with a little hope. And they didn't do that in this one.
I think this is the end of Fargo. That's what I was going to say when I was interrupting you while you're doing that. I think this is the end of it. I think this should be the end of Fargo. They brought the biggest character there is into play in essentially God, I think, this wandering Jew or an agent of God. And we saw, I mean, how could they top that? How could they make a bigger presence, a bigger character, bigger representation of such a powerful force than that representation in future?
Well, I don't know, but in that same article that I was reading, it was like a question and answer with Hawley. They asked him if he had any thoughts on a season 4, and he said no, that he was, that all of his thoughts right now were going toward, what's the show he's doing, Legion?
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. And he said, but he had not discounted it, and he may come up with a season 4, you know, maybe not in a day or a week or a month, but there may, you know, be one when he has time to essentially think about it. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, really, I've really enjoyed watching Fargo, but I think it's kind of run its course. So I hope they don't try and come up with a subpar season.
I mean, I agree. So how would you rate this season compared to the others?
I call them all pretty equal.
Yeah.
I didn't like the Fish NATO one.
I love the season. I just didn't like that particular scene, you know, episode, that particular scene. But
yeah, I love the ending. I love the ambiguous. You never know what, you know, what do you think? I like that. It doesn't bother me so much as it bothers other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I mean,
I think that's, if you were going to end the series, that's the way you would end it. Like, Hawley kind of knows, you know, there's more likely I won't do season 4 than there is, so I'll leave it this way. Because he has made pretty definitive endings in other seasons.
Right. I agree.
All right, Michelle. So we've wiped out three podcasts now. Americans, Fargo, and Better Call Saul.
Yeah, all in just a couple of weeks.
It's a relief.
I know. What's next, Mike?
Nothing.
Vacation?
Just shorter work days where I don't have to watch TV and write a bunch of notes.
Yeah.
No, I really like doing it. And I really love doing it with you. And thanks for filling in where I needed help this year and let me join your Americans. And, you know, I'm sure other things will come out. There's always cool TV to cover.
There's a lot. Thank you for saying that. That is really sweet. I appreciate that. And thank you for letting me, you know, ride on your coattails in Fargo and True Detective and The Affair and what else? The Slap and everything else we've done over the years, because I've really loved it. I mean, this isn't a goodbye or anything. It's just a, you know, but I do appreciate it. There's a lot of good TV coming on soon too. I mean, we won't be taking notes on it necessarily. First of all, love The Handmaid's Tale. I'm not sure that, you know, I mean, somebody should be doing a podcast. We need more podcasts on that for sure. What else? What's coming on next month?
Have you watched Legion?
I have not. Have you?
I watched the first episode of it, and it was so weird that I got to admit I didn't really care for it too much.
Yeah.
Although one of the prime characters is Simone from the Fargo season 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's cute. She's fun to watch. She's a good actor. But I didn't get into it. It was very, very wild and, you know, super freaky. you know, think of Fargo on steroids. Noah Hawley. It's Noah Hawley. So.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I got to give it more chance, more attention. So.
Well, that show's coming on what's it called? How Crack Began? That's not what it's called. What's the show called?
Yeah.
They've advertised it the whole time.
It's more of a documentary, though, isn't it, than a drama?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, it's supposed to be like the truth about crack and how it came on, but I think that's going to be, it looks like it's going to be really, really good. Snowfall. It's called Snowfall. Okay. But I think that's going to be good. Game of Thrones, of course, coming back. How can that be anything but spectacular?
Last season for that, too.
Is it? Is it the finale? Oh, wow. I did not know. I thought they weren't even done with the books yet.
They're not.
Wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
The, what's his name? Who's the author?
R.R. Tolkien?
Tolkien.
What is
it? J.R.R. Tolkien is Lord of the Rings.
George R.R. Martin. Yeah. I must be tired, too. It's been a long couple days. It really has.
All right, Michelle. Well, cool. Let's wrap it up. We're pushing an hour and a half here. So
yep.
Thanks for the great partnership, and I love doing these with you. We'll figure out what to do next when the time is right.
We'll figure it out.
All right.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We really do appreciate it.
All right. See you later.
Okay, Mike. Bye-bye.